Thank you guys so much for talking with me about this project. I just want to say right off the bat, this film took me 3.5 hours to finish. It's a 2-hour film, but it took me 3.5 hours. Super informative, but it's also very emotional. And I was wee little when it happened. And so just revisiting all that footage and just being taken back. I mean, this works. It's a really effective time machine just because of all the different angles that we get on the ground. And then just how, you know, informative the journalists are and how descriptive they are. I mean, that's their job. But to have so many journalists in one room, you know, just being so descriptive, it really packs a powerful punch. So I really enjoyed it, though. I just want you to know that. And my first question is, where did the idea to put this project together come from?
Well, I'll take that for sure, if that's okay with Phil. He and I, Phil Hirschkorn and I, are co-executive producers of both projects, the documentary and the 20-part series. But we have long been collaborators. It wasn't just for these dual projects for the 20th anniversary. We have co-written a book, and that came out shortly after the 9/11 attacks. And that book is called Covering Catastrophe. And so we have been long time partners. And so when Wondrium came to us to figure out how we are going to approach the 20th anniversary, we jumped at the opportunity. We thought it was a perfect idea to commemorate the attacks, you know, two generations later.
The book that Allison mentioned, Covering Catastrophe, Broadcast Journalist Report 9/11, came out in 2002. And in many ways, the film, similar title, Reporting 9/11 and Why It Still Matters, is very much a sequel. We had 130 contributors in the book, broadcast journalists only. That's TV and radio, local in the three cities where the planes attacked or landed, network people, cable people, and it was very comprehensive. We couldn't get all 130 into a 2-hour film, but we got about 45. And actually, about a dozen of them weren't in the book. It includes broadcasters that we might have missed for whatever reason, both on air and behind the scenes, producers, for instance, and also some print people, some of whom are well-known, and print photographers who took some of the most well-known photos that day. So in very much this film and the women's series is a sequel to that book, but with the same goal. We all know the cliche that journalism is the first rough draft of history. And that's what we have brought together here, riveting firsthand accounts by people who were there. And I think the common thread is really the classic Journalism 101 teaching, which is report what you can see and hear with your own eyes. And I think across the board, what's compelling is that that's what our contributors deliver, are those firsthand accounts, not what they heard somewhere else, not what they read the next day, but what they saw and heard and reported themselves.
Yeah, I think that you hit the nail on the head right there, that there are so many anecdotes in this where reporters are saying, you know, usually I have to report on the facts. And, you know, there's a large team of people who help me report on the facts. But that day it was so many people on the ground actually just having to do it themselves. And it was, I forget the name of the one person who said it was just, you had to stick with the basic principle of keep it simple, stupid. What can I see? What can I hear? What do I know? And I found that to be so fascinating. As much as this is a reflective and informative piece, it is also kind of a love letter to journalism. And that's why I really enjoyed it.
I mean, I think you're right. And if my memory serves, the quote that you just offered is from Byron Pitts, who is now at ABC News. I mean, these pieces of interviews, these reflections are all the household names that we know today. Phil mentioned that we included print journalists. We have Maggie Haberman, you know, from the New York Times, Linda Wertheimer from NPR, Savannah Guthrie from the Today Show, who was a Cub reporter during these attacks and during that coverage at the Pentagon and in the trial of Zacharias Moussaoui in the years and months and all of the time fast-forwarding after the attacks. Tom Brokaw from NBC News. So these are names that you know, but delivered to you in a way that is so raw and so intimate. And they offer their personal reflections too. Yes, it is a primer of Journalism 101, but it's also that tension of being concerned for your own family during these attacks. And so it is very personal. It's very raw. And I think that there's going to be lots of lessons, but also some surprises.
And I think one of the things that we accomplished in the film project is that we go beyond the day of September 11th. You know, the book from 2002 by design stopped at sunrise on September 12th. I would say the last quarter of the film and much of the conversations that Allison engaged in with the women contributors go well beyond that, as we say, why it still matters. This is the 20th anniversary. So we have an opportunity to talk about, for instance, how the site got rebuilt, how three memorials that everyone agrees are spectacular in their own way got built at the three sites, the three ground zeros. We talk about the war in Afghanistan, which everyone's talking about even more now than we were when we wrapped the film just a couple of weeks ago. We talk about really one of the most underreported facets of 9/11, that more people appear to be dying and have died from what's been called ground zero illness, World Trade Center illness, the respiratory problems that infected not just first responders in the days and weeks afterwards, but all the civilians who were involved in cleaning up what was called the pile and then became the pit, people who just lived in the neighborhood. A story pretty well known in New York, not so well known around the country. In fact, if I may say so, you know, there's three contributors from WCBS Radio, Tom Kaminsky, the helicopter reporter, Peter Haskell, who was on the ground in Midtown that day, and Sean Adams, who was right close to the site. And Sean discloses in the film that he himself was diagnosed with World Trade Center-related cancer. So that's a very important part of the story. The benefit of having 20 years to reflect, we certainly reflect on all of those themes, as well as what's different about journalism these days. You know, there was no social media, there was no Twitter or Facebook. Very few people, I think nobody, in fact, had smartphones. So amateur video existed, as we know, but it didn't exist in your pocket. You didn't have a computer camera in your pocket to share as a reporter, as a civilian on the street, or frankly, as someone trapped in the buildings or on those planes. And we talk about how different this kind of incident would be today with those tools at our disposal.
You know, social media might not have been the best thing back then. So it's definitely interesting in that regard too, how you, it shows you just how much journalism has evolved in such a short period of time. Now you touched upon, you know, Sean and Tom and Peter being in the film. Those are some journalists that are only, you know, in our backyards though. And as you said, this is a national piece. This is a piece for journalists everywhere. How do you go about gathering, or how did you go about gathering this pool of professionals? Did you put out an email, make some phone calls? What was the process of, the book, you say there's so many more, but I can imagine you probably had to narrow it down and go back to your sources, but just for this project in general, how did you go about getting these people to be a part of it?
Well, Dempsey, you are a journalist. You know how that gets done. You do the work. And so part of our work was a little bit easier because we had interviewed many of the contributors in our book 20 years ago covering catastrophe. But there, of course, as we mentioned, people who we did not interview for the book that we greatly wanted to contribute. So we just rolled up our sleeves and got to work. We sent emails. We made phone calls. We asked friends of friends to make emails, to make phone calls and send emails. So we knew who our top picks were going to be. We knew who was where on 9/11, whether that meant, in Washington at the Pentagon or in New York City at Ground Zero. Even aboard, we haven't talked about it yet, even aboard Air Force One with President Bush. So we weren't just on the ground for this documentary that we've just produced, but we're also up in the air on Air Force One with George Bush and, of course, at the crash site in Pennsylvania. So we just dug deep and we worked fast and we just covered the ground of the folks that we really wanted to get into these films.
And part of that, Dempsey, was the partnership with the 9/11 Museum. Obviously, The Great Courses, now rebranded as Wondrium, is the producer and distributor of the film and the conversation series. But we, from the start, had a partnership with the 9/11 Museum, which still sells the book, Covering Catastrophe, in its gift shop. And actually, I think we can disclose this, owns the rights to the book at this point. It was a charity book from the beginning, and they sell it. They were equal partners in launching this. They will receive versions of the film to display as they see fit over the years to come. But the invitation actually to participate in the interviews to the prospective contributors came from the museum, that first email. And all of the New York interviews, almost all of them, were done in the museum. When you see the people talking, that's where they are, in that great large room where the last column stands. So that partnership was key to persuading people to participate. Not that they needed a lot of persuasion. Most people, not to toot our own horn, felt kind of honored to be asked to be in this historic film, preserving their stories and preserving the legacy of that day. So there were people who weren't in the book that we missed, some better known than others. One example would be Scott Pelley, who went on to be the anchor of the CBS Evening News for many years and is now the lead correspondent of 60 Minutes. He was still with 60 Minutes 20 years ago, but I don't think he was the first person on the screen. There were some bigger stars back then, but now he's very well known. And then there are people who are not very well known. Allison mentioned Air Force One. So we have someone who covered the White House, I think, for 40 years for ABC News. Ann Compton, she was in our book, she's in the film. But then there was someone we missed in the book called Kia Baskerville, who was a producer, White House producer for CBS News. And she has a very interesting role, was with the president literally all day, right up to the moment that he made his important speech from the Oval Office on the night of September 11th.
She cued the president of the United States when he addressed the nation. So it's extraordinary.
So with any project like this, I have to ask, there is a lot of material to sift through, but you guys managed to make it into a tight 2-hour window. Was there anything that had to get cut out that you guys wanted or really tried to fit into the film? Was there anything that you wish you probably would have included? Does that make sense?
Yes. So let's do the math, Dempsey. We did 45 interviews. They were actually pretty tightly limited to about 30 minutes each because of our limited time, 2 days, to do back-to-back-to-back-to-back interviews inside the 9/11 Museum. So we had about 20 to 25 hours of sound to play with. So when you get down to a 2-hour film, again, do the math, that's about 10% of the material. I don't know whether that's the normal ratio of what's aired versus the cutting room floor in documentaries, but that's our ratio. I will tell you the rough cut that we strung out was 4 hours. But we cut it in half. But if you work in our field, whether that's radio or television, you always know the rough cut is a little bit heavy and you start chipping away, whether you do a minute 30 for your local broadcast or the nightly news or long form. There's really always a time limit, no matter what. And 2 hours is actually longer, I think, than we anticipated we would get when we started this project. An hour to an hour and a half was the mental expectation. But the content was so strong that the great courses, Wondrium, agreed to keep extending it as we watched the various drafts and cuts come down. I don't think we left any topic out. What we did was we condensed. When you have a project like this, you try to have sound bites back to back that reinforce each other but aren't repetitive. You try to have stories that each one propels the narrative forward rather than keeps it stuck in one place. We try to be careful to adhere to chronology that was correct based on the 9/11 Commission report or the 9/11 Museum's timeline, but also you're bouncing back and forth between the Pennsylvania story, the Washington Pentagon story, and the New York World Trade Center story. I don't believe we left anything out. Sure, there's some anecdotes that we loved that were cut for time. I'll just mention as an example, two of the stellar Pentagon contributors who are well-known, Barbara Starr and David Martin, Barbara at CNN, formerly at ABC, and David Martin, still at CBS News for 30, 40 years at the Pentagon. You know, they had some somewhat longer anecdotes about the dramatic rescues that occurred at the Pentagon, people literally jumping from windows that were broken through on the second, third, or fourth floor, being caught to get out of the burning Pentagon, along those lines. And, you know, unfortunately for time, we had to set some of those aside. Maybe if we do a director's cut down the road, they'll make it back in. But in other ways, they describe the heroism that occurred at the Pentagon. But for the most part, I think we covered every topic we wanted, both in the documentary and in the women's series. Allison, would you agree?
I definitely would agree. And I would say, Dempsey, the reason why what Phil is saying is so important is that the partnership with the 9/11 Memorial Museum is critical in this endeavor because we have so much hours worth of material, all of which are historic and memorable and important to record the record of that day. That's why our partnership with the museum is so valuable, because the condensed version in the documentary, and then of course the 20-part series that focuses just on the women journalists, those extended cuts that Phil was just talking about, they will live at the museum. And so we may have trimmed for the film projects, but those important historical elements, those anecdotes will not be on the cutting room floor in perpetuity, gone forever. They will instead live in perpetuity at the museum. And so they'll be available to students and historians and archivists for years to come.
That is so cool. That's awesome, really, because that really just proves that all the hard work that you guys went into put into this is not going to be wasted at all. That's so interesting, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Now, as you just mentioned, all right, as well, this is a part of a series, and there is a second documentary that focuses more on, you know, female journalists. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, it's a 20-part series. And so for the 20th anniversary, we thought it would be great to highlight 20 women who were on the ground or in the air aboard Air Force One or at Shanksville, et cetera, at the Pentagon, who reported the news on September 11th and the days and weeks and years to follow. And, you know, why the women, right? Like, why focus on just the women? Well, in a generation, so much has changed in the landscape for women in the workplace and for women in journalism in particular. And so not only do we talk about their journalism reporting that day and in the years to follow, but we also talk about, on a very personal level, what the last 20 years has meant for them in what they faced as a woman working in the media profession. And so I found these interviews enlightening. I found them in many cases shocking with what was revealed to us in terms of both good, right? We could talk about the good, but the shocking is the, in some cases, the sexual harassment, the age discrimination. But of course, there are things that have changed too that were for the benefit and empowered women in the last 20 years. And so, of course, we focus on that too.
So speaking of journalism, you know, as to why it's so important, this documentary is clearly a 2-hour testament as to why it's so important. Why do you guys think it's important to keep this story alive for future generations?
Even though 9/11 was perhaps the most watched news event in the history of the world, second only to the first moon landing, perhaps, it has been 20 years, and an entire generation of Americans and others have grown up who did not watch it, who did not witness it, who didn't know anybody who died, and except maybe, you know, a lot of the children who lost a parent certainly knew people who died. But it hasn't been forgotten. But I think current events, such as what's happening in Afghanistan and the end of the war that started on 9/11, make revisiting 9/11 in depth, even if it weren't an anniversary, so important. Obviously, the cliche is never forget. And it's important not only to never forget the people who lost their lives, who were memorialized in the three memorials, but also what actually occurred, who did it, what was the response, how did the nation react, what were the consequences? And we talk about all of that, but underneath it, you just have to get the facts out there, because we live in a world today, and the film addresses this, where facts aren't trusted, where people believe in different facts. And as one of our contributors says, it's hard to imagine that the story, if you will, of 9/11 would be accepted as cleanly as it was back then. Of course, there were many facts that were wrong on 9/11, as breaking news often is in its initial hours. But if you go back and remember things we thought on 9/11, such as the death toll, such as the timeline, were quite a bit off. And it really took a few years till the 9/11 Commission came out with its report in July of 2004 to get all of those numbers correct. But those are basic facts. And I think it's important to reassemble all of those as we reflect back on the emotions of the 20th anniversary, of the conversation about the Afghanistan war, and what was that all about, and was it worth it, to just go back to the beginning and chronicle as a reminder for people who were too young to know or to see it, but also for everyone else. It's really a refresher course. The film is really an educational video, if you will, which is why it's so appropriate that the company that's done these great courses for so many years produced it.
And I would add that I not only agree with Phil Dempsey, but I would add this to those folks who were so young or not yet born. There are so many reasons why 9/11 still matters, right? That's the subtitle of this documentary film, Why It Still Matters. For one example, you go through an airport today and you go through security. Those measures are in place because of 9/11. We are living with the consequences of 9/11 every day in our lives. And perhaps many people don't know why certain regulations and practices are in place that do regulate how we move through the world. But this film, this documentary, Why It Still Matters, you will learn why it still matters. And I hope it becomes something that is more easy to discuss, because now you'll have these incredible reflections, these recollections, these firsthand accounts that will walk you through this day that happened 20 years ago.